Welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast, Season 2. This season, we'll again hear from the experts. These experts are social engineers and open source intelligence investigators. Sometimes they'll tell us stories about their experiences, and sometimes we'll have some questions for them. We hope you'll enjoy them. For this episode, we welcome Zlata Pavlova. Zlata is a social engineer and OSINT enthusiast. She works at InGuardians and loves the challenge that comes with any OSINT or social engineering assessment. Being fluent in three languages definitely plays to her advantage for the OSINT work, and today she's going to share a story about one of the recent cases she worked on that combines the elements of OSINT and social engineering. From the frozen tundras of Siberia, please welcome Zlata.
When I first started getting into OSINT a couple years ago, mostly out of curiosity, I was shocked with the amount of information that was publicly available and accessible. But even more shocking was the amount of information that people were willingly sharing with the world on social media networks, for example. And looking at all of this, privacy became my other area of interest and concern. It is no secret that people living in the public eye, like celebrities or like super famous or wealthy people, often become targets for scammers, stalkers, etc. And the story that I'm gonna share today is about that. It also combines all of our favorite subjects, such as social engineering, OSINT, and a little bit of OPSEC. So a while back, a friend of mine reached out for help because his colleague, who is a very well-known person in the movie industry, had her Instagram account stolen. And by the time he reached out, it's probably been over a month of them trying to get it back. So what happened was his colleague, the victim in this case, got a direct message, DM on Instagram, from someone who was claiming to be the Instagram support and offered her to get her account verified. It made sense because she had a quite large number of followers and it was time. However, Instagram never asks for that, nor they will ever DM you and offer you that. The scammers caught her in the perfect time because she was busy on set filming and she didn't really have any time to kind of like process that information, and she fell for it. The way they did it was kind of clever as well. She was instructed to get the blue verification checkmark herself, and then after that provide the authentication code that she would be receiving in the text message. And then they also warned her that her account is going to be locked for a little bit so they can finish the process of verification and like finalize everything on their end. The way that they were constructing the messages and the responses, it was resembling automated responses to make it more believable. So she received two codes total, and then she sent it over to the fake support and she got locked out. So what happened? Well, the codes that she received were the codes to reset the password both for her Instagram and her email. How did the bad guys knew her cell phone number or her email? Well, her account at the time was said to be a business account, and both real cell phone number and personal email were provided as method of contact. And the same cell phone was used for email as well, like on file. So the codes that she provided was used to reset both passwords on Instagram and the email. Once she realized what happened, she tried to reset everything back, but since the scammers already had access to her email, every email that they would get from Instagram support, the real Instagram support, you know, they would act accordingly. And now, since they have the access to her Instagram account, they changed all of the info on the file. They created a new email that kind of looked like the original email, like the actress's email. And the account is now verified, so every attempt that the victim made to create a new account was quickly reported, and those accounts were deleted. Now, the real Instagram support took some time to respond, and once they were able to finally get through and get the link to reset everything, turned out that the scammers were a step ahead, and they activated 2FA on the account. So at this point, good luck getting the account back. Seems like they were also getting very upset because she wouldn't pay ransom for her account. They were raising the price every day. They were really nice at first. They were asking nicely. And then they switched to like a full harassment mode once they realized they're not going to get the money. They were able, however, to get a couple of $100 by scamming her followers. And they used the classic methods and classic stories, you know, proven to pull someone's strings, like raising money to help an animal shelter or donate to sick children. And they went to the extreme, like posting about a relative that passed away. And again, those posts were coming from someone who is pretty famous. It is a verified account. So a lot of people that were still not aware that that account was compromised, was stolen, a lot of people actually fell for that and transferred money to the scammers. So the Facebook became the only platform for a while where the victim was able to communicate with friends and fans, and the scammers used it to their advantage as well. I have no idea why they haven't tried to get access to her Facebook. No idea. But, you know, they used it to their advantage because they were copying all of the photos and videos and then reposting it to Instagram, creating that sense of like up-to-date account, active account. And since all of the updates were consistent, both on Facebook and Instagram, again, a lot of the followers, her fans, who didn't know about the compromise were the ones who fell for the fraudulent activity and fell for all of the money scams. So I started my OSINT research based on the information that the victim provided. It was mostly screenshots containing a few phone numbers, emails, and partial names. I've also had the advantage of conducting the searches using the native language and Russian search engines like Yandex, Rambler, or Mail.ru. I also checked out Bing and Google, but they were not so useful for me in this case. So the cell phone numbers don't provide a lot of information about the owner. unlike in United States in some cases. So there wasn't much I could find besides like the city and the county where that number was registered. And usually, unless you know someone on the inside working for a cell phone company, or you have an official request from like a law enforcement agency to release that information, there's not that much you can find. The majority of databases that you can find on the dark markets often fake or outdated in a lot of the times, as well as those websites that claim to provide you with all of the details. You just have to pay. Also, like 99% of the time, they're fake as well. So another thing to kind of like keep in mind, if we're talking about an organized criminal group, they have their own hookups, most likely, and those cell phone numbers could be registered to people who don't exist or maybe passed away a very long time ago. During my research, I was able to find a number of other Instagram accounts that were compromised, and the same number was on file, which led me to believe that this is not a one-person operation. There are a lot of social media aggregation sites like Instabase or InstaStory that indexes not only usernames but also posts and sometimes comments and, of course, hashtags. So that's how I was able to find a match for that cell phone number that scammers used. I've also came across a number of websites that are essentially like marketplaces where you can buy or sell a social media account. Usually the account that has a large number of followers or a verified account. Instagram, Telegram, VK.com, TikTok now, probably the most popular accounts. I want to point out that this is not uncommon for a Russian segment of social media, because accounts with large number of followers, especially verified accounts, are always in high demand. They're often used for monetization by bloggers or maybe like small businesses who pay large amount of money for advertising to large accounts, whether they want to sell their product or maybe market themselves or get new followers. So having the ability of buying basically a ready-to-make-money account, it's something that a lot of people are looking for. Anyways, so I came across a cached copy with the listing with our victim's account for sale on that marketplace, and the scammer's cell phone was listed as method of contact. At the time of my search, the listing was no longer active. The cached copy that I had was probably like a month prior. So it is not clear whether someone actually bought that account or not, but I personally doubt it, because the asking price was super high. And also, I want to note that that marketplace with bunch of accounts for sale, the accounts are not only from like Russian-speaking countries, they're basically from all over the world. So to me, the selling platform was a bit shady, because it was not clear how the accounts end up there. The owners of such marketplace, such website, have something to do with the actual account takeover, or they simply don't care how the accounts end up there and who is selling it. I personally think it's both. My assumption in this case, based on the fact that the city where this business, this marketplace is registered, matches the city where the cell phones that the scammers use are registered. Of course, there is much more research needed to be done to make a solid connection, but I think it's a pretty good shot. The partial names that the victim provided in the screenshots matched to a few people associated with that marketplace that I was able to find on VK.com or ВКонтакте, which is a popular Russian social media site. By Googling, or I guess in this case, I should say by Yandexing the cell phone number, I also came across a hacker for hire ad on the carding forum. Classic. The person, of course, used an alias and the most generic combination, which, of course, made it harder to try to find something. And the only accounts that I was able to find were like two empty profiles on VK.com. The other bits of information, like electronic wallet numbers for Yandex wallet or Kiwi wallet, as well as the number for like wire transfers, wouldn't reveal a lot of information either, unless, like I mentioned earlier, the official request was made by law enforcement. The victim did go to the local cybercrime unit, but they did not seem too interested to assist because they said that there was no motive for them to open an investigation. And I guess the amount of money that the scammers were able to collect wasn't significant enough. So we did, however, provided them with the report of all of our findings, just in case if they ever decide to look into that. Long story short, while I was doing the OSINT, the victim was able to get her account back through various friends in various countries. She was able to get a hold of someone who works at Instagram, and then they were able to escalate the case and had someone basically manually remove the scammer's info and then disable 2FA, two-factor authentication, and then have her log in basically like in real time while they were on the other line, making sure that the link works. And then she successfully was able to log back in and then secure everything from there. The Instagram security team was also notified about the large number of fake support accounts floating around, as well as all of the compromised accounts by the same group. But considering that those accounts are still present as this episode airs, no action was taken to remove it. We actually also had a similar case at InGuardians where a celebrity reached out for assistance because someone was trying to impersonate them and was asking their friends and family for money. It was happening during the first months of COVID lockdown, and we all know that the entertainment industry suffered from the lockdown as well, so their pretext was perfect. The only thing that kind of raised a lot of questions was the fact that they were asking to pay in Bitcoin, and that immediately raised the red flag amongst friends and family, and luckily no one fell for that. But looking at the information that the victim provided, like, emails and the text messages, it was clear that the person behind is someone who's English, not their first language, and I could obviously relate to that because the sentence structure and the use of certain words immediately jumped out, although, like, the grammar was good. It's just certain words that were used, they're not really used in, like, everyday conversation. The scammers in this case used VoIP numbers, and we know that sometimes it's very challenging to try to identify who that number belongs to. In my search, the two apps that were particularly useful were Truecaller and Calls.ai that I used in my Android emulator. So both apps populate their database from the contact list that you give permission to access, and if there's a match, you could see how the certain number is saved in someone's contact list. The match that I found interesting was the one that referenced Bitcoin in it, and I decided just to try and check it on bitcoinwhoishoo.com, which is a website where you can search for different Bitcoin wallets, not only by address, but also by, like, a keyword or maybe a tag, and see if you get a match. I did get a match, and Bitcoin Whoishoo also shows if there are any, like, fraudulent activity associated with that wallet, or if that wallet address was seen somewhere else on the net. And I was able to find, like, the reference that I found traced back to someone in Indonesia. And then I thought to myself, that looks familiar, because before that, I was looking at the victim's public Facebook page, and in the Facebook in the page transparency section, where it shows where the page is managed from, Indonesia was in the list, to our victim's surprise, because apparently they hired a marketing company to run their social media, and they had no idea about different locations this page was managed from. And there were probably about 5 different locations where there were supposed to be, of course, only one, which is United States. So in this case, the victim was also very vocal about the fraudulent activities being conducted on their name, and the scammers backed away quickly. But we still provided them with the report of all of our findings and everything else, so they can take it to the appropriate agencies for further investigation. So those are my stories, and to sum everything up, I think everyone should be careful with the information that we share online, especially when it comes to people living in the public eye. So personal emails or real personal phone numbers shouldn't be listed as method of contact. And then if there's a third party involved in managing the social media profiles, whether it's marketing firms or maybe a personal assistant, they should be aware of the risks, and there is nothing wrong to ask a marketing firm to provide some sort of transparency about how they run the accounts and who has access to it. I also think that for people, public people, it makes sense to go through the whole process of removing their data from the various data brokers or public search sites like Spokio or Family Tree and a bunch of others. There are a lot out there. Michael Bazell actually has an amazing book, Extreme Privacy, where he talks about all of the necessary steps to be on that road for privacy. So highly recommend that book. And the famous Russian saying is "Доверяй, но проверяй," trust but verify. So we always need to be alert and aware and try not to get and fall for those phishing scams or social engineering scams. So that's it. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Layer 8 podcast. You can find out more information about us at layer8conference.com and find more podcast episodes on many of your favorite platforms. We hope you enjoy these episodes as much as we do.